Shop the Sherwin-Williams 4th of July sale and get 30% off paints and stains June 27th through July 7th. With prices starting at $34.29, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi.
Let's talk about Barry Morphew, the church-going family man, outdoorsy Colorado husband whose wife Suzanne vanished on Mother's Day in 2020. Nothing to see here, right? And whose narrative has unraveled like a deer blind in a hurricane ever since. At first, Barry played the grieving husband role to a T. Press appearances, prayer vigils, choked up denials. But behind the scenes, investigators say his alibi didn't hold, his movements didn't track, and now, 3 years after Suzanne's remains were finally recovered, with a rare tranquilizer in her bones and enough circumstantial weirdness to make even the chipmunks nervous, Barry is facing a second murder indictment. But the case isn't just about the BAM tranquilizer or the seven dumpsters he was putting things in right after she disappeared. It's about what happens when a prosecution bungles a high-profile case so badly the defense doesn't even need to break a sweat. We're talking about withheld evidence, disbarred prosecutors, expert witnesses tossed out like trash. The first attempt to convict Barry was, frankly, a disaster. So what makes the second shot different? That's what we're unpacking today with someone who knows how these things are built and how they fall apart. Defense attorney and former prosecutor Eric Faddis, he's been in the courtroom, he's dealt with these kinds of forensic chess matches, and he's here to give us the legal x-ray of where the prosecution stands now. We're diving into everything from prosecutorial misconduct to consciousness of guilt to whether seven dumpsters and a suddenly GPS invisible truck are enough to get a jury to bite. And yes, we're even going to talk about Barry's infamous chipmunk excuse. Because this is Colorado, and apparently the rodents are part of the defense strategy. Let's get into it.
Sure. So, and then I practice in Colorado, yeah. So I'm very familiar with this case. In the first round, this was a rather small prosecutor's office, not always used to, you know, monster, nationally publicized murder cases. And they made some errors, and they made some serious errors. They didn't turn over some evidence to the defense that they should have turned over. There were other problems with the case, which caused a judge to determine that the prosecution's experts had to be excluded, that they couldn't even use them for the jury. And as we were approaching trial, they had not found the body yet. And so without these experts and without the body, I think the prosecutors folded at that point and dismissed the case. Subsequently, the body was found. Subsequently, there was this analysis that shows this tranquilizer in the victim that they think they can connect to Barry Morphew. So here we are during the second indictment for murder of Barry Morphew concerning his wife.
And there were some very serious things that went on in the first trial. I mean, I believe it was the DA or the prosecutor was disbarred?
Yes.
I mean,
yes,
tell me about that. I mean, explain that. And is that something that could be brought into this trial of like, look what happened the first round?
The prosecutorial misconduct and errors on the government side, including holding on to important evidence and evidence that can be exculpatory, that could show innocence. Prosecution can't do that. That's a cardinal rule. On top of that, there were a series of other errors that caused the elected prosecutor and the jurisdiction to be disbarred. Very uncommon. Now, I think the judge is going to really run a tight ship this second round and probably prohibit the jury from hearing about that disbarment. However, could some of those prosecutorial missteps come into evidence? Could the jury hear about those? Potentially.
And it's not a look you want if you're on the prosecution of any. I mean, granted, I know it's all new prosecutors. It's being tried in a whole different county now, so it's not the same group by any means. But it is something when you're wanting a jury to try and find some sort of reasonable doubt. I mean, if the first one got dropped, why is this one still? I mean, We know why, but it's little things, little nuggets you can throw in there, and hopefully they stick if you're the defense of Barry Morphew. Her remains contained BAM, the rare tranquilizer only Barry is known to have used. It's a big deal. It's a big forensic link. But it is circumstantial. Barry used BAM while deer farming years ago when they were in Indiana, and it really hadn't been, I guess, allegedly using it since. The purchase of it was several years earlier. And they didn't find any on the property when they looked the first time. So we did find a dart cap, a broken dart gun that apparently wasn't working, you know, but I guess all things you would dispose of after you killed someone or make your gun look like it's not operable. What do you think about that? The fact that there wasn't the chemical in the house to go and say, look, this is you. It's just we got receipts for you buying it a long time ago in a different state.
You know, I think the government is going to be fine neutralizing that issue because that they have a lot of other evidence. What they say is Barry covering this up, doing concealing measures to make sure he doesn't get caught. He's going around to all these different dumpsters and dumping stuff. And you know, there's no real reason why he would need to go to four different dumpsters to do that. And so I think the government's going to say, hey, even though it wasn't on his property at the time, that's because he covered this up because he knew we were coming for him.
Yeah, I mean, there's all of that. A lot of consciousness there that looks of guilt and the seven dumpsters going and dumping stuff. And yeah, on the surface, I can't think of any reason one would be going to seven different dumpsters to be dumping different things, unless they're all full, which is a stupid excuse. But he's saying, I go out here, I'm a contractor, I got a lot of junk in my truck, I don't like to go pay the dump fee, so I just kind of dump it around at different places. I don't know. I mean, I think people may look at that and go, well, I'm not a contractor, so maybe they do move it around at different, I don't, it seems unlikely. It seems like a contractor wouldn't be going to seven different dumpsters, but I don't know. I don't know the answer to that, quite honestly.
I think there's some plausibility to that defense, and I don't know personally.
Yeah.
But there are complicating observations as well. So some of Barry Morphew's workers claim that that day, when the government thinks he was sort of covering all of this up, there was a strong smell of bleach around him that wouldn't have been necessary at the particular job site. There were just some other curious circumstances for Barry Morphew in terms of how he was moving around the state and that kind of thing that I think make things more suspicious. But then again, maybe it was just a contractor, you know, trying his best to dump out stuff where he could dump it out. Could be.
Could it be just a case of the worst coincidences ever? I don't know about that. Barry's phone also went into airplane mode minutes after Suzanne's last text to her lover. Again, not the best of timing here. A blackout like that, I mean, does that suggest consciousness of guilt in a legal context? And also, with his phone, his vehicle GPS also went dark. I don't even know how you do that, but apparently there's something you can unplug somewhere where your vehicle's going to stop tracking you, and then it turns back on suspiciously several hours later, 8 hours later. Oh, weird.
You know, yeah, I think people are sort of getting wise to the fact that our phones all have GPS, and if a person didn't want to be tracked, they would have to somehow deactivate that, and it looks like that could be what happened. Alternatively, you know, he might say, hey, my phone went dead at that time, and there was nothing I could do about it, and so it wasn't covering something up. And so all of these peculiar circumstances are going to be up to the juror's interpretation, and they're going to look at it as a whole when combined with all of, you know, the bleach smell and the multiple dumpsters and this BAM. You know, is that going to be enough to get the prosecution over the hump? That's the question.
How many experienced chipmunk hunters do you think are going to be on the jury? Serious question.
You know,
how many?
In that part of Colorado, more than you'd expect, maybe.
Yeah,
but still, you know, there are a lot of interesting wrinkles to this sort of rurally set case that are going to be specific to that locale. And so these jurors are going to know more about squirrel hunting than certainly I am.
Y'all got a chipmunk epidemic in Colorado. And I've been there. I mean, there's like one mountain town where I've gone to, and it was an old mining town. It's like haunted or something, and there's not much up there. But it's like the chipmunks, there's hundreds of them, and they hang out on like wood and pallets. You can walk over, they'll climb on you. It's the craziest. I've like video of the kids when they were younger at this. Like, you got chipmunks, you got prairie dogs, you got the rodents going on. And they're surprisingly like fairy rodents. They're very friendly. I do like the rodents in Colorado. I don't know if the chipmunks. I don't know if a chipmunk's a rodent, but they seem friendly. But
there are places where the chipmunks are really the ones in charge. I think they have seats on city council by now.
Yeah.
There are some issues once you get closer to the mountains with those little critters.
It makes you wonder. I could see that. I know the chipmunk analogy sounds ridiculous to a lot of people. I have to admit, in Wisconsin, I have hunted a few chipmunks in my time. I'm not proud of it. I was a smaller child, and my dad said, here's the BB gun. Go take care of the chipmunks. And you know, when you're taking out chipmunks, you do run around your yard a lot. I will attest that that is a real thing if you are hunting a chipmunk with a BB gun. I think maybe poison dart might be a bridge too far for a chipmunk, but he told investigators that his erratic phone movements were from chasing chipmunks. How do you think that'll land out there in Colorado?
Better Rural Colorado. In that jurisdiction than it would land in like Denver, where I practice. In that jurisdiction, you're used to being out in the elements. You're used to living amongst the ecosystem, which includes chipmunks and deer and bears and mountain lions, everything else. And so to take measures to try and, you know, make sure your home is safe and not being overrun by little critters is actually a pretty common thing out in those rural locales in Colorado.
So here's where we land. You've got a man who says he was just another Colorado contractor chasing chipmunks and dodging dump fees. You got a woman whose body turned up 3 years later with BAM, an animal tranquilizer tied to Barry's past, lingering in her remains. And you've got a prosecution trying to convince a jury that the dots connect to one conclusion: murder. What makes the case so fascinating and infuriating is how many opportunities were missed the first time around. The original prosecution wasn't just flawed, it was broken. Evidence was withheld, experts were disqualified, and the DA disbarred. That's not a bad day in court. That's a courtroom collapse and a career collapse. So now we're back. New team, new county, new indictment. But the same big question: is the evidence strong enough this time to stick? Is the story they're telling airtight or just cleverly rearranged circumstantial pieces? Eric Faddis gave us something rare, real insight into how a case like this plays to a jury. The legal weight of circumstantial evidence, the danger of relying too heavily on forensic novelties like tranquilizer residue, and the psychological tightrope a prosecutor walks when they're already blown the case once, or another prosecutor has. But here's what still lingers. Why BAM? Why the conveniently timed phone and GPS blackouts? Why seven dumpsters? Why the smell of bleach? There's a pattern of concealment here that is hard to ignore. And while that might not be enough to convince on its own, it sure makes you wonder, if Barry Morphew is truly innocent, why does his behavior scream the opposite? In the end, the law demands proof beyond a reasonable doubt. But in the court of public opinion, you don't need a microscope. You just need a gut. And Barry's story, I think to a lot of us, it kind of stinks. But he is innocent until proven guilty. And he maintains that innocence to this day. What are your thoughts? Tell me in the comments section on our YouTube channel. If you're not there already, just search Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi on YouTube and you will find us. You can comment in all of our videos and all of the cases that we discuss right here. You can even comment before everybody else and watch them before everybody else when you become a premium subscriber on our YouTube channel. So check that out. Just search Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. If you're listening to us on the audio platforms, Apple Podcasts, you can become a premium subscriber there for the audio end of things and support us that way and then get access to everything well before anyone else gets a chance to hear it. As we make it, you get it. And we greatly appreciate that support as well. Regardless, hit subscribe wherever you're listening. That's free. And you don't miss out on any of the content that we put out for you every single day. Looking forward to hearing your thoughts. Until next time, for everyone here at the Hidden Killers Podcast and True Crime Today, I'm Tony Bruschi. We will talk again real soon.
The latest true crime stories, expert breakdowns, and shocking twists all in one place. Press subscribe now to the Hidden Killers Podcast and True Crime Today.